phone, in your car, in your barn, in the tractor cab. We are where you are this Labor Day weekend on Hoosier Ag This Week. Thanks for joining us. I'm farm broadcaster Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today with the top news from Indiana and U.S. agriculture. We have a crop update from West Central Indiana coming up on today's show. Also, how a student with zero background in agriculture, pursuing a degree in computer and data science, decided a career in agriculture was the life for him. And we'll tell you about research on corn roots that might surprise you. You might be missing out on 50 bushels per acre just based on what direction those roots are heading. Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin's Indiana Farm Forecast is about 10 minutes away, right after Andy Eubank brings you grain market analysis after an up-and-down week for the markets. Let's start today's show with the dreaded Asian longhorned beetle. No, it's not a college football team mascot. Yes, it sounds like maybe it should be. If you're an Indiana woodland owner, you need to be on the lookout for this invasive insect. It could cause major damage to your trees. CJ Miller has the story.
This is one of those insects that we kind of wish didn't exist, so we very tightly control and act on them as soon as we find them.
And that's Bob Bruner, exotic forest pest educator with Purdue University's Department of Entomology.
The damage that it does is so intense that it's actually fatal to most trees. What they do is they bore into the tree and they go past the bark deep into the wood where they'll consume a lot of the tissues and damage a lot of the tissues therein. And unfortunately, trees just can't survive the level of damage they do. Eventually, you'll see the limbs die back, the leaves fall off, and the tree will eventually become brittle and won't stay standing very well. So the trees themselves become dangerous too.
And unlike the emerald ash borer that killed millions of ash trees across Indiana and the Midwest, the Asian longhorn beetle can cause damage to many different species of trees.
Ones that we would be looking out for here in Indiana, it's going to include ash as well, but you'll also be looking at birch, elm, hackberry, horse chestnut, maple, and I believe poplar and willow are also in that list. So those are lots of trees that people really like. They're planted either ornamentally or they're planted for timber purposes. So you can see that there is a lot of potential for damage to areas where people have a lot of investment in.
Bruner says the pests are easy to identify.
You're going to be looking for a kind of largish beetle that's going to be shiny black with white dots on its body. Now, there are a couple of beetles that look like that. One of them is called a pine sawyer, but what you're looking for here is a beetle that's going to be so shiny black it'll almost have a blue sheen to it, and it'll have very, very long antennae that stretch much farther past the length of its body. You can also look in the trees that it's around, and if you can find a circular hole in the tree that's about big enough to put a number two pencil in, that's going to be a sign the Asian longhorn beetle has emerged from that tree, and it's a good time to start looking closer for the bug itself.
He says if you see the Asian longhorn beetle in your woodlands to call Indiana DNR right away.
And they can do that by calling 1-866-NO-EXOTIC. This is one of the most tightly regulated insects amongst tree pests. You can actually look up on the USDA's website for them, and they map out areas where infestations are known and what they are doing about those infestations.
Read more about the efforts to stop the spread of the Asian longhorn beetle at HoosierAgToday.com and the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app. I'm CJ Miller, Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.
Hi, I'm Blake. I graduated from Franklin College with a degree in computer science and data science.
And Blake knew that degree would be beneficial in today's computer and data-driven world, but what he didn't know is that it would drive him toward agriculture. Not until he made the connection with Agrinovis Indiana through their Field Atlas program that helps build awareness of the ag bioscience industry and connects college students with careers and on-farm experiences. Blake Talbert is his full name. He connected with Agrinovis during his sophomore year, and he's learned a lot since then about how he could contribute to the ag industry.
I think as a data scientist, I think more analysis needs to be done and more technology can be implemented with farming to improve efficiency, especially moving towards sustainability and things like that. I think technology and data science will play a huge role.
He says without this connection to Agrinovis and the Field Atlas platform, he likely never would have thought about the ag industry as a potential career opportunity.
It not only made the difference and made me consider it, I think that was huge, but it also gave me a step in where I'm currently interning at a farm consultancy, And if I didn't have that experience with Agronovis, where I could say, hey, I'm a data scientist, I'm not from a traditional agriculture background, but I can do these projects in agriculture and I can understand the field, I think it both gave me confidence and it gave my employer confidence that I had that skill.
Help spread the word. You can learn more about the Field Atlas program at the Agronovis Indiana website. You can find a link on our website, HoosierAgToday.com. More farm news on the way, including news about new technology that could alert growers to plant stresses weeks before we can see those stresses on the plant by making the plant glow. Yeah, you heard me right. And we have the Indiana Farm Forecast with Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin on the way as well. First, it's time to talk about those markets. They've been up and down all week. Here to talk about it, our Andy Eubank.
Thanks, Eric. And in that up and down week, we did actually finish with two straight sessions of higher markets. We'll have the settlements from Friday coming up, going into a three-day Labor Day weekend. We begin, though, with market analysis. I grabbed that in the middle of trade Friday from Brian Basting, Advanced Trading. Just a little bit higher. Seems like corn, beans, and wheat want to go higher. There are some limiting factors. The dollar index is up, for example. And, of course, there's the prospect of a really good harvest that is still going to hang over the market for some weeks to come.
Well, thanks for having me, as always, Andy. Yeah, I think you summarized it well in those brief comments that we are seeing some rebound in these markets here. A very oversold market, four-year lows that we saw in corn and soybean prices, as your listeners know, earlier this month here in August. Starting to see a little bit of short covering here, a little bit of export interest surfacing here this week. We're selling a little bit more soybeans, selling some corn a little bit for 24-25. I don't want to overplay that. We're still looking at, for example, a new crop soybean book that's below last year by about a third, at least to China and unknown destinations. That's our biggest market, of course, China slash unknown. But regardless, these low prices have at least perked up the interest of some end users. So I think, as you say, though, I would remind your listeners that harvest is here. The crop is maturing a little faster than normal. I noticed here that was true in Indiana, as well as other areas in the Midwest here. Now, again, we're not going to see every single combine going anytime soon, but certainly as we get into that first full week of September, second full week for sure, I do think that's going to be something that the market's going to be watching. And, of course, as we get into harvest, Andy, what the market's going to be looking at is, are we going to confirm or not confirm those USDA yield estimates from September, from August in that September 12th report?
And if those numbers come in, those yield numbers come in, demand, good demand would certainly help offset any negative impact on the markets. So tell us where we're at from a demand perspective.
It would certainly help to see some end user buying down here. We are seeing more interest surface, as I mentioned a moment ago. On the export side, when you see those daily flashes, we had a real good new crop export sales report on Thursday this week for both corn and beans. So there is some end user interest down here. And it's not just from China, for example. Mexico has been a very strong buyer of U.S. corn for quite some time. China put their toe in the water, as it were, and bought some sorghum this week. But regardless, yes, at these low prices, below $4, in some cases, well below $4 prices for corn, and now, at least on the board, below $10 bean prices, has caught the eye of the end user.
Economist Brian Basting at Advanced Trading. Brian's number is 309-664-2314. On the Hat Friday Farm Market Review, September corn ended the month at 378, up 6 1/4. A nickel higher on Dees corn, 401, an important close above that $4 mark. And March corn, 419, also up a nickel. November beans, 7 1/2 higher, ending right at $10. January, 10.17, up 8 1/4. And December wheat, 551 1/2, up 2 3/4. Meats higher too. October live cattle, 178.60, 70 cents higher. A nickel higher on October lean hogs, 82.22. I'm Andy Eubank with the Friday Farm Market Review. Markets are closed on Monday for Labor Day. Much more still to come on Hoosier Ag This Week.
Podcasts are everywhere today. But how do you find the one that has something you're really interested in? The Hoosier Ag Today Podcast Network is your one-stop shop for podcasts covering Indiana agriculture. Farm policy, farm news, agronomy, soil health, ag biosciences, and more can all be found at the Hoosier Ag Today Podcast Network. Check it out on the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app and at HoosierAgToday.com.
Dry weather settling into the Hoosier State for a large chunk of this upcoming forecast window. I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin with Hoosier Ag Today's Weekend Weather Outlook. We're kicking it off with a very nice set of weather conditions. You know what? This past week was, I would say, typical August weather. That's kind of the way I related to it. Humidity levels were high. Temperatures were high. We had some excessive heat watches and warnings out the beginning of the week. Thunderstorms, yeah, we saw some of those trying to pop up in the heat and humidity. As always, when you're relying on heat-based thunderstorms for your precipitation, you become very disappointed. And there were a lot of folks that were disappointed here this past week. Now, we're dealing today with the frontal boundary trying to clear through the rest of the state. The moisture really got going as we got into the overnight last night, and this frontal boundary is still kind of dragging across parts of Indiana today. Central and southern Indiana are going to be seeing on again, off again rain showers and thunderstorms, probably right on through sunset. Northern Indiana, I think, is done. Maybe you get a renegade shower or two popping up yet today, but if you're in northern Indiana, I think what you've received so far is going to be what you're stuck with going forward. So an additional quarter to 1 inch of rain still falling today, central and southern Indiana. We'll keep our eyes on that. Going forward, we see everything winding down before midnight tonight. We clear out and dry down for tomorrow. Humidity values dropping significantly. And you know what? Temperatures pulling back as well. It's going to be a pleasant Sunday. And you get into Labor Day on Monday. I can't believe I'm going to say this, but even more pleasant in my mind as temperatures fall again. We're going to be in the lower 70s to middle 70s for highs on Labor Day. Morning lows down in the low 50s. So a very nice setup with low humidity. High pressure sitting right on top of the Great Lakes, right on Michigan and well, Lake Superior, Lake Huron as well. We're going to be seeing that hold through probably Tuesday into early Wednesday. So that's going to put us in a very comfortable position through the next few days. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday are going to be very nice. Now, once we get on the backside of the high, south flow returns. That's going to warm us up, definitely. And it's also going to bring some humidity back, I think, as we move toward the end of the week. Thursday and Friday, we'll have to deal with a little bit more muggy conditions. But we're not looking at a lot of precipitation. I think during that overnight Thursday night through Friday midday time frame, as another front tries to sneak through, we may have to leave the door open to a few hit and miss pop-up showers. But coverage right now looks like it's only about 30%. And then we get behind that, and it's another cool down, dry down situation for next weekend. Friday night through Saturday the 7th, Sunday the 8th, high pressure is going to be over the Great Lakes again. Cool temperatures, low humidities, very nice weather. But it does mean we are dry probably now into mid-month. That's going to hasten crops toward harvest. I'm Ryan Martin.
Time is running out to earn more for your acres. The Soil and Water Outcomes Fund pays farmers to begin or expand on-farm conservation, like reduced tillage and cover crops. Last year, they paid farmers an average of $33 per acre. They offer one-year contracts, and 50% is paid prior to verification. Get paid to reduce erosion, improve your soil health, and more. Hurry to their website to request a payment estimate, theoutcomesfund.com. That's theoutcomesfund.com.
Welcome back to Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today. Corn and soybean crops across west central Indiana continue to look very good, and with another round of rain, it could be a perfect ending to the season. Andy Eubank joins us once again with a Channel Seeds growing season update.
Thank you, CJ. Eric Warnoff, a field sales representative at Channel Seeds covering West Central Indiana, says early Wednesday morning storms didn't produce that inch of rain that he would like.
No, according to my climate field view, I've got fields mapped from Lafayette towards Attica all the way down towards Vetersburg and down towards Danville, Indiana. And a couple tents is all I saw, just west and maybe a little bit around the Lafayette area. But at point south, it was very sporadic, more of a fireworks show of some lightning through the middle of the night and not much precipitation from that.
The crops look pretty good in Warnoff's territory, but late tar spot that has come in even after fields were sprayed after tassel could be a concern.
The fortunate thing for us, I think we're far enough ahead in most cases. We're close enough to black layer where this disease is going to maybe limit standability, but it's not going to be a detriment to a big yield loss. Now, some of the areas that sprayed too early, where in tar spots coming in, a half milk line or so. Those are some fields that are at risk, and I think a lot of those growers need to be paying attention to those fields.
And he says the soybean crop looks really, really good.
Pod set's been good. A lot of high management fields had their, fungicide and insecticide treatments there at R1, R2, R3 range. Looking good, podding well. I think the bean crop can be pretty stable. You start to see a little bit of sudden death.
Warnoff's number one message going into harvest is stay safe. Hear more of those timely thoughts in the full Hat and Channel Seeds growing season update at HoosierAgToday.com and our free app. I'm Andy Eubank.
$42.5 billion. That's what USDA is projecting as next year's U.S. ag trade deficit. Eric Pfeiffer has more on the different factors that are causing the trade deficit.
A lot of this is tied to falling commodity prices.
That's USDA chief economist Seth Meyer on the chief reason why USDA is projecting a record trade deficit next year after having just set that record here in 2024. Though it's not just sharply declining commodity prices, other factors at play.
A slower Chinese economy, continued strength of the U.S. dollar, China diversifying its sources for trade, perhaps a little bit weaker on export competitiveness for ourselves.
All of this is leading to a bigger trade deficit despite rising exports.
$4 billion into $169.5 billion for exports, an increase of $8 billion on imports to a total of $212 billion for fiscal year 25, which means a rising trade deficit of $42.5 billion forecast for fiscal year 25.
This USDA forecast comes amid declining economic conditions in farm country, compounded by the lack of a farm bill. It also follows an intense policy debate over the value of free trade deals that the administration has completely moved away from, but both parties' lawmakers argue are a must to open export markets. I'm Eric Pfeiffer.
Well, it sounds like the kind of ag bioscience technology that you would find in a science fiction movie. A new ag tech company based in California has developed technology that allows corn and soybean plants to give off signals that can be picked up by satellites and drones to let farmers know about crop stresses weeks before you can actually see those stresses on the plant. Sabrina Halverson has more.
The technology is from the ag tech company Innerplant, which creates crops that emit specific optical signals when they're under stress from pathogen attacks like fungal infections. Vice President of Communications for Innerplant, Sean Yokomizo, says those signals are visible from satellites weeks before the stress is visible to the human eye at field level.
We work with the genetics, so plants have an immune response just like humans, and when they're attacked or under stress, they react at the genetic level, at the molecular level. So those sites where they react are mapped, and we track to those sites and insert another piece of DNA so that when the plant is reacting to a specific stress, it creates a fluorescent protein, which is detectable from as far away as space. The cool thing about that is it's very early because it's tied to the plant's immune response. So within 24 hours of infection or stress, it begins to emit the signal, and that is 4 to 6 weeks before it would be detectable in the field.
Agronomists can use that data to treat the individual plant that's under stress, which means only treating the plants that need it, catching problems very early, and using less chemicals in precise treatments. Yokomizo says the technology can collect a lot of data, but the farmer won't have to weed through a lot of unneeded information to get the data they need.
We've designed this system to be very straightforward. It's contained in a seed. Farmers know how to work seeds. They plant them, they grow them, and then we provide the recommendation based on the signal. So it's a spray. You've got fungus in your field, you don't have fungus in your field. There's an awful lot of data going on behind the scenes, but providing the farmer with a usable, simple tool that's indicative of early action. So it's also a signal that doesn't rely on, we're collecting this index, that is showing your field is under stress from fungus right now, but there's nothing you can do about it because it's too late. But for next year, so your house is on fire is a great thing to know, but wouldn't it be better to know, like, hey, there's smoke coming from your kitchen, you should do something about it now. That's the loop that we're trying to close for farmers, is give them actionable information that's early enough so they can take that action and preserve their yields before they're impacted.
You can see samples of what the satellites see on the Interplant website. We've put a link on ours, HoosierAgToday.com. I'm Sabrina Halverson.
And Vincennes University has recognized five of their ag faculty members with inaugural Roe and Shorty Whittington professorships. Those professorships were created with a gift of $750,000 from the Whittington family of Bartholomew County to help grow the ag department at Vincennes. Read more at HoosierAgToday.com. Eric Pfeiffer joins us with a report from Becknology Days, hosted by Beck's Hybrids last weekend at their headquarters in Hamilton County. Stick around for that coming up in just a few. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today, and this is Hoosier Ag This Week.
Ag Bioscience, the number one ag tech podcast globally, is now available on video. Hear the latest from innovators in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture.
But this is an incredibly special state. And if you don't have perspective, now I've lived in a different state, you may not understand it. But we have momentum now as a state, but we also have momentum working together. See, there's a lot of technology that's being advanced right now. But one thing that is never going to change, Mitch, you and I are humans. And maybe I would like something automated, and maybe I want some sort of ease of effort where I go to do something. But there are some cases where I just need that human connection, and that's the difference in Indiana. We make the time for each other, and we actually know when to automate and when to innovate. And there's this beautiful balance of both.
Get more episodes online at agrinovusindiana.com. Click on podcasts. Also available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back. Thanks for joining us on Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today. If you know anything about me at this point, you know that the way to my heart is through my stomach. And that's why Beck's Hybrids, at their annual Becknology Days, they provide lunch and ice cream. And that's how they got me there last weekend. Of course, I go there for other things too. Their practical farm research is always on display. This year on display was their root reveal research. That's where they're working to classify the root structure and volume of each of their corn hybrids. You might be wondering why. Well, Jim Schwartz, Director of Research, Agronomy, and PFR, says that studies from the University of Illinois have shown that root volume can impact corn yield by as much as 50 bushels per acre. He explains kind of how this all came to be and why they're doing what they're doing.
This started with my son, who was doing research at University of Illinois under Dr. Bielo, and his mate there at the lab was doing work on root size as it related to fertility placement. We started having conversations, realized we've been doing root digs for a number of years, and realized there are differences in the root architecture. In other words, is it more of a vertical root, horizontal root, or something in between called balance? And so it led us to be curious about, well, if I could understand how architecture might impact three things, populations, stress tolerance, and then my nitrogen placement, could I de-risk some of this for the farmer? In other words, we've had so many times over the years where we'll sell a hybrid to a farmer, it doesn't work. We're like, well, why didn't it work? What happened? And we believe we might learn a little bit more from the architecture, studying the architecture of the plant and its roots.
Here in Indiana in particular, we've been having these years where we kind of have this dry spell and we're like, well, you know, the plant's not really growing the way we want. We always say afterward, well, you know, it was growing underground. It was growing underground, and that's where it really this is kind of going back to this idea of it was growing underground, but now we're kind of thinking, how was it growing underground? What direction was it growing underground? Is this kind of the idea that we're going for here?
It is, really. So Penn State University has done a fair amount of research on this topic as well, and their understanding is that they believe that more vertical roots will perform better in stressful environments, low moisture environments, and maybe even low nitrogen environments. And our data tends to support that. So to your point, if I'm under moisture stress and the architecture of my hybrid is such that it grows more horizontally across the top of the soil, it's not following the moisture line as it moves down through the soil, as well as a vertically rooted hybrid. And so, yeah, we believe that understanding, to your point, how the hybrids are growing underground could unlock some of the mysteries that we've not really understood up to this point.
And is that where your research is going, that maybe we can find these hybrids and have, you know, scores, kind of like we've had for disease and everything else, about where these roots might go, and we can, you know, put it on the bag?
It's correct. So I would anticipate maybe next year even, we have scored all our hybrids now through these root boxes. So we do believe that we will start releasing this information out, say, is it vertical, horizontal, or balanced. In our hybrid lineup today, 50% of our hybrids are balanced, about 25% are vertical, and about 25% are horizontal. So the key to that is, for instance, imagine if I side dress my nitrogen in the middle of the row with a coulter, and I have a very vertical root architecture, I'm likely going to get less of a response than if I have more of a horizontal root architecture whose roots extend out through the middle of the row. Those are the kind of things we hope to be able to say to the grower. If you're doing this on your farm, you're not going to change the way you farm. So if you're doing this on your farm, let's think about, maybe we say a balanced, or maybe we say a horizontal in that case. So that's what we're trying to do.
And you've said it multiple times today, like, there are no bad roots. It's just, it's how you farm, and let's match the hybrids that we sell you to how you farm.
That's correct, because the one thing, you're exactly right, there isn't a right or wrong root system, and all these different root architectures can produce excellent hybrids. But what we want to do is make sure that we are matching the farmer's practices best match the root architecture, and especially, again, around population and nitrogen management. Because one thing we know is when roots touch underground, there's some kind of signaling that goes on. We don't know if it's a biochemical signal, root exit, we don't know. But so if you imagine, if you crowd plants and they have a more horizontal root architecture, going to be more root touching. However, if I have a more vertical or a smaller root structure, less root touching, so likely less of that negative response to the increased population. So really matching the hybrids to the farmer's practices is the key. However, we don't believe this will be about placing it on the right soil or understanding, you know, the foliar disease resistance. Those are all key components of that decision as well.
Again, Jim Schwartz there, Director of Research, Agronomy, and PFR for Beck's Hybrids at their annual Becknology Days last weekend. You should really see how they do this root reveal research. Head now to HoosierAgToday.com and catch some of the video that I captured last weekend. It's really quite cool. Again, head now to HoosierAgToday.com and find this story about Beck's and their root reveal research. That does it for this weekend's edition of Hoosier Ag This Week. It's a big weekend at Ross-Ade Stadium. It's Ag Day at Purdue as the Boilermakers take on the Sycamores of Indiana State. We hope to see you there. If not, we'll catch you around some other time, perhaps next weekend. Same hat time, same hat channel. This has been Hoosier Ag This Week from Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.